Good morning and welcome to The Conversation. My name is Graham Nystrom and I'm your host today. This is our live call-in show. 503-325-0010 is the number to call if you want to check in and talk about anything at all, but we're going to target the conversation around reopening schools this morning. And I think we should get right into it because we do have a caller on the line, a very special caller indeed. This person's name is Jacob Lewin and he is a member of our news department. Jacob, are you there?
Yeah. Hi, Graham. Thank you.
Good morning, and thanks for calling in and spending a few minutes with us.
Sure. My pleasure.
So you've been covering Astoria School District's plan to reopen. Do you want to give us a quick summary to start things off?
Yeah. The decision was just made last night about how to do this, and I was very impressed. I thought a lot of thought went into it. They got a lot of input. And it was very, very heartfelt and carefully done. And it's a little surprising. It's a little different than a lot of other districts are doing. They're going to start the school year just a little bit late on September 14th, and they're going to start remote learning only. And they're going to, and it's not that dramatic because October 1st is their hoped for time to begin to go into a hybrid system, to begin to do some in-person teaching. But it was a tough decision, and it really showed, I think, that the district and the superintendent and school board really thought that at the end of the day, their number one mission was to keep kids safe and to keep staff safe and the concern for the community as well.
Well, those are certainly reasonable things to base your decision on.
Yeah. And I was a little surprised that they'd done it because they put so much attention into doing things to make the school safe. They had kept on an option of online for parents who wanted that. They were repurposing other buildings to use as classrooms so they wouldn't be too crowded. And they'd have to do masks. They'd have to check for symptoms. They keep the 6-foot distancing. They have these cohorts where relatively small groups of kids stay together so there's limited contact with the others. And they seemed to be set to go with those, but then kind of held off and decided let's really do this gradually and err on the side of safety.
And so at this point, these decisions are being made by the local school districts, right?
They are. You know, everything with the pandemic has got an asterisk next to it. You know, who knows if there's a giant spike or something. The state and the governor in the spring did call for schools to be shut down. There's an outside chance, I guess, it could happen again. But if they're allowed to open, it is a local decision how to do it, when to do it. And that's what they did here. It's also kind of struck me that the schools have become so much more important a part of our community as things go on. Because as I talked to the school superintendent, they're talking about, well, parents are going to have child care problems. We're going to help deal with that. There's problems with food. Kids aren't getting enough to eat, and they've been depending on the schools. We'll make sure that food is available. A lot of kids don't have computers, which was another problem with remote learning. Well, we're using federal funding. The school is going to get them computers and make sure they have internet connection. So it seems to be growing, that role of the schools in the community.
I'm happy to hear that. Would you stay on the line with me while we check in with another caller?
You bet.
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead. What's your comment or question?
Hi, I am just calling in. I am a public school teacher and also a parent. And my main concern as a parent is just coming up with a plan that is consistent and sustainable for my children for the whole year. I understand the need to be flexible and to be able to change things for students, you know, based on what's happening. But for me, especially as a teacher, if I'm going to go and be there to take care of other people's children, I need to be able to know that my children are in a place where they are getting what they need. And so having a consistent plan for the whole year is a big priority for me.
So that's something that you're saying that you're not seeing is that it's kind of like, well, here's what we're going to do, but we're going to maybe change it.
Yeah. You know, knowing that we're going into a distance learning situation that will be reevaluated in 2 weeks, You know, it's just really hard, you know, not just for me as a teacher, but anyone to go in knowing that at any moment the plan can change and can change multiple times over the year. Like I said, it's really hard for me to be there for my students fully if I don't know what's happening with my own children. So we're working in our own family to come up with a plan, and which may or may not access what the school district has to offer, that will be sustainable for our family for the whole year.
So you're considering your options?
We are, definitely. And I have talked with a lot of other people in the education community who are all considering those things as well. It's been really interesting to me to just kind of get my feelers out there. I just started with you know, people that I know are involved with schools, and then, you know, figured I'd branch out after that. But it's interesting to me that people working in the public school system are still looking for, you know, coming up with their own plans that are going to work for them.
I'll throw this question to either you or Jacob, who's still on the line. Do either of you have a sense for this idea of moving to a hybrid system after a period of distance learning? What are the indicators that they're going to use to make that change, or is it just that's the plan? We're just going to do it on this date, and it doesn't matter, you know, what numbers are or what certain indicators are?
Well, I think, there'll be a variety of indicators to go on, but to one point that the school district has been trying to make is, you know, they were online, of course, in the spring, and they admit that there's nothing like teaching in person. I mean, it's just not as good. So they will try to go in person as soon as they safely can, but they are also trying to make the online experience better, as they've been calling it, more robust than it had been in the spring. So I think, you know, caseloads and state guidance, because they have been getting guidance from the Oregon Health Authority and from the local health department. It's what people are telling them, too, how people feel, how safe people feel, including the staff, if they feel safe enough to come back. So I think those will be indicators to look for.
So for our other caller, do you feel like your voice has been heard at your school as to what your concerns are?
I do. I mean, we've been asked multiple times, you know, where our comforts are. But I also, you know, just know that we have to look out for ourselves and make a plan that's going to work for our family, and, you know, do the best we can to make it work with the plans that the schools have in place as well. You know, I just can't rely on that plan to necessarily work for us. And I, you know, it's nothing against the public school systems. I know that we're all doing the best that we can, but we definitely have to, just because it's what the district came up with doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work for everyone. And I think it's okay in this kind of a situation for people to have different plans and for people to do something different this year.
I'm curious to know what you've found as far as alternatives.
Well, that's kind of where we are. We're kind of in the research phase of all of this. You know, I don't know if you have heard the term pandemic pods.
I have not.
A lot of people are talking about kind of creating their own little pods of small groups of children, you know, under 10 kids that would get together and either use a homeschool curriculum or use the distance learning materials from the school district. And, you know, they would meet daily and do their coursework together so that they're still getting the social interaction. They still have a little peer group. They're still getting the education that they need, but it also is freeing up parents either to be working or, you know, doing what they need to do and not having their own children only in their home all day long. So that's kind of what we're looking for, you know, looking to see what other families are out there, also looking for the same thing and seeing if we can kind of create our own little micro school.
So, Jacob, I think I'm going to let you off the hook for now, but for our other caller, I've got one more question for you, if you're willing. Thanks, Jacob.
Okay.
Sure, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. So, my question is, as you look at these alternatives, to what extent is technology part of the conversation, and to what extent do people say we need to rely on technology for our alternatives, or is there are there people who are saying, I would prefer that technology not be part of our solution or our alternative? Is that part of the conversation at all?
It hasn't been yet. My personal preference would be for there to be a limited amount of technology. I have two children. I have a going to be first grader, and then I also have a high school student. And I understand that for my high school student, that's probably going to be a factor. Technology is going to be a huge piece of what she has to do, and that's just kind of where that's going to be, and I don't really have a lot of control over that. But for my first grader, that's just not what I want. And so, you know, that will definitely be a part of what we consider, you know, in whatever we choose or whatever we come up with, that, you know, we limit that as much as possible. It's just not the same as interactions with people and interaction with materials. And those things are really important to us.
If you are just tuning in, this is The Conversation, and we're talking about reopening schools and how we feel about the plans and the alternatives, and the number is 503-325-0010. There's two open lines, and we'd love to hear from you, love to hear your thoughts. So do you have anything else that you would like to share as an idea or just even an open-ended question for your community of parents and teachers and students that you're thinking about?
I don't think so. I think just, you know, to me, this is a really unique situation. This is a really unique time in our, what will eventually be our history. And I just think that it's okay for us to be exploring alternative ideas here. I don't think that we need to be trying to stuff everything into what we know of as school and you know, the tradition. That I think we need to step back and say nothing about this is normal. Nothing about this is what it was a year ago from now. And it's okay to be looking at other options. And you're not giving up on public schools. You're not giving up on, you know, what we know works. But doing something different for a year is not a bad idea.
Well, that sounds brilliant. Thank you so much for calling in this morning.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
We've got another caller. Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Am I on the air?
That's you. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, good morning, Graham.
Good morning.
Anyhow, you know, I feel so sad about children's experience right now, you know, school and that ability to find oneself and be with others who are also struggling through that developmental phase in their life. It's just unbelievable that kids are growing up in an era like this. But I think one of the things I've noticed is the hodgepodge. And it seems like officials, federal to local, have sort of abandoned ship. And we're not getting any consistent leadership or instruction from our governance. To me, it seems like a barrel of monkeys on acid. You know.
But the question is it good acid or bad acid?
Well.
Just kidding.
That's your life experiences, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's a very sad situation, and I wish it wasn't here. But we can't wish these problems away.
I agree that it's a sad situation, but you know, some of the people who've been talking about this, for what it's worth, are trying to put it in a positive context where they are saying this does represent an opportunity, and. And I would love it if that was how more people felt, rather than this is a scramble, this is taking us out of our comfort zone, how are we going to cope? This is an opportunity, let's try something different. And like our last caller said, too, to give credit to the school districts and for the fine work that they do and the things that do work well, but what are the opportunities that we're presented with at this point?
Well, I think that's a very positive way of going about it, and I really appreciate that. I'm 73 years old and went through life way back when, and it's just, you know, so maybe my comparisons are not hitting the mark, and that we shall adapt, as humans do, and somehow this will all work out. But God bless our children and our schools and our teachers.
Can I ask you a question?
Pardon?
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
So looking back to those days when you were getting your education, name something that stands out to you as being one of the things that you extracted the most value out of your education that you would wish for other people to get while they're getting their education.
Well, learning things, that's for sure. You know, science was very, very, very interesting to me. Art was very interesting to me. I think one of the most interesting things was, you know, like all these kids with a big easel and tempera paints and painting our experiences and lives in color. Science, art, being with others, finding yourself through your own experience and others' experiences as young people.
It's interesting that you say science and art, because that definitely represents a balanced brain to me, to appreciate both equally.
I've had both of those things in my life all throughout my life.
And so should we all.
Yes.
So one thing that I've noticed is in the way that people are interacting with each other, in the way that people are treating each other, in the way that people are responding to the situation that we're in, there seems to be a little bit of a humanity gap in the way that we treat each other. And in the, what I'm, I guess, deciding, it must just be an inherent human trait to be contradictory. So even if you agree, you're still going to find some way to disagree. And I think that that would be one of the things that I would hope for with all education, whether it's the current system or any alternatives, is that the way that people treat each other gets addressed a little bit more.
I wanted to say something. How can I put this? This whole issue with Black Lives Matter has been a real education. For me, I always knew there was racism, but I never understood the extent of it. And so what I'm trying to say is education is the way to become a better person and become more humane.
Thing that comes to my mind is, can we agree to agree?
I would hope so.
Yeah. But you know,
that's the challenge.
The group decision making process is really challenging, because even when we agree, we still seem to find some way to disagree.
That's the oddity of being a human being.
Right.
Anyhow,
God bless us.
I really enjoy your show.
Thanks.
I listen every Friday. Great service, and you bring up great issues, and you help educate us.
Well, tune in next week. I'm taking a break next week, but we pre-recorded a show, and it's with the executive director of Oregon Black Pioneers. His name is Zachary Stocks.
Cool.
And you're going to get a little bit of an education on the history of black people in our region. And so that's next.
Well, that'd be fantastic. And I've done some study into that, and it's quite an incredible story. I'll look forward to hearing it.
Yeah, and what I love about their organization is that it is about storytelling, and that they are getting primary source documents journals, articles, ships' logs, and they're telling these stories of these black people who have been in Oregon since the 1500s.
Oh, wonderful. I really look forward to that program.
Well, thanks for your call this morning.
You have a good day.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.
It's The Conversation on KMUN. We've got 10 minutes left in the show, and we've got three open phone lines. So would you like to check in about school reopening plans? We heard a little bit about Astoria's plan. I'm curious to know what the progress is in Tillamook County or in the Seaside School District or on the peninsula, Wakayakum County. What's happening in your area? What are the challenges that you're facing? And how are the plans coming together? This is going to be a tricky year. And I think that the schools are going to face some of the biggest burden in all of this. My heart goes out to you if you're a business owner or, you know, however this situation creates a struggle for you. But I think that the schools deserve particular attention and support. Young people, education, that's where I am at. And while we're waiting for our next call to come in, 503-325-0010, I want to promote an upcoming show this afternoon. We have the pleasure of Carol Newman on Arts Live and Local at 3 p.m. once again today. We hope to make a regular thing out of this in a way that Carol can be safe and we can be safe and you can hear her voice because she is such an important part of this station. 503-325-0010. Check in. It's a conversation. Here's a little music. Back to The Conversation. We've got a caller on the line. Hey, go ahead.
Hey, good morning, Graham.
Good morning, Jim.
Yeah, you got my voice down. Yeah, I'm a weekly caller. I can't help it. But
hey, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. We do have caller ID.
Oh, that's great, man. Yeah, I used to be a programmer down here. You may recall that even.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, I think the education part needs to be emphasized a little bit more, and the education part is something in transit. It's transitory because everybody is learning about this. We just had a letter in our paper yesterday from a local gentleman who's in his 80s, and he thinks the kids ought to be back in school because they don't get COVID. Well, hello, they do get COVID, and it's not so much just the kids. It's the fact that the kids are around adults, and the adults do get it, and I would hate to be a teacher. And, of course, I would hate to be a kid as well. But I'm just glad that I'm in, just getting into my 78th year. So most of my life, obviously, is behind me. But the stuff that's ahead of me is becoming more and more interesting as the days go by. So I don't know. And you posted that thing from 1918 or suggested that after my last week's call. Thank you for giving me credit for that.
Absolutely.
And I did go there and look it up, and it's fascinating. So I think the people should revisit that if they haven't yet. Should go back to 1918 and see how the Spanish flu was dealt with. And that was way more toxic than this COVID stuff. You got the flu one day, and 2 days later you were pushing pansies. So anyway, again, thank you so much for doing these shows, and I look forward to next week's call.
Great. Thanks for calling in, Jim.
All right. Bye-bye.
Trying to remember who it was that said, those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it, but that was up on the wall in my world history class in eighth grade. We've got another caller. Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hi. Yes, I'd like to just comment. I'd like to agree with your past callers that our children are precious, and they're our canary in the coal mines.
Oof.
Well, they're our future. I mean, they're everything that we worked so hard to to try to get going. And then I one more kind of a ghoulish side of this on COVID-19. I just witnessed a death, unfortunately, at a hospital, and they pulled a tube out of the person, and it's indescribable. And so I believe that if we get a little more realistic, we might see a few more masks on people and show the respect that this virus, we need to get real with it and stop pussyfooting around.
And stop politicizing it.
Oh, big time. That should never been introduced into the arena at all. What's happened to these people that we sent to Washington to represent us? They're not representing themselves. I mean, they can, of course, but my God, we are the government, and we put them there to do our bidding and do our will in a Christian manner. You know, my mother always said there's a right way and a wrong way, and it's that simple. And I just don't get with these space cadets, man. They're so spoiled with all their little privileges that they call it the Beltway fever, because you get back in there. I was stationed back for me years ago, and they call it Beltway fever because it's a mentality on the Beltway there. And that's, you know, let them venture out here to the North Coast and check out some of these. We just need to get more real, and I wanted to focus on the children, and they truly are. They're, like I said before, our canary in a coal mine. So.
Rudolf Steiner.
I'll leave it at that.
I was going to say that Rudolf Steiner, who's the one who created the Waldorf education system, was known for saying that education is the only therapy that exists for a society that is ill. He said society was ill back in the 1920s when he wrote this.
Oh, my God. Well, yeah. Anybody, you know, I grew up with my mother's favorite saying was, a blind man can see it. And
wow.
She, you know what that means.
Yeah.
Because it's so sad, and so we could do a lot better. You know, come on. I'm turned 70. I noticed a couple of your callers are in their 70s, but I just turned 70 on the 15th. But so anyway, I'll leave it at that. Thanks a lot.
It's happy birthday, and thanks for the call.
Yeah, we need to get real.
Absolutely.
Bye.
Bye. Next caller, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Three things. In Texas, they recently announced, an article came out that 80 infants had tested positive for COVID. Now, maybe, I mean, I don't know where this is coming from, but and why that happened, but it's amazing to me. And COVID is supposed to have long-term effects, possible brain neurological impacts. So even though they may be light carriers and not get the disease as easily as us older folks, there must be some kind of impact. There could be some kind of impact. We don't know. We're gambling. Secondly, South Korea had a study of, I don't know how they did this, but it was like 60,000 people got tested, and they were tracing. They were smart enough to do tracing. And they determined that teenagers from the age of 10 to 19 were the biggest carriers and the biggest, the most fertile ground for the disease, the virus. So we've got high-power carriers going back to school.
30 seconds.
30 seconds?
Yep, running out of time.
Let's see, I can't recall my last point. So.
I didn't mean to throw you off.
Okay, well, thank you for your time.
Doing my Amy Goodman impression there. You have 10 seconds.
Thank you for your show.
We'll call back in 2 weeks when we're back on the air live.
Great, thanks.
Thank
Bye.
You. Bye.